This is the politicalbetting.com Polling Matters podcast. My name is Kieran Pedley. This week we're going to be talking about Iowa. As those people who are following the US presidential race this year will know, next week is the first electoral test of those candidates seeking their respective party's nomination for president. And what a campaign it is. Of course, as we know, President Obama is restricted by his two-term constitutional limits and therefore will not be on the ballot in November, so both parties have to choose a nominee. On the Democrat side, we have long assumed Hillary Clinton will get that nomination ever since Joe Biden decided he was not going to run. But she's facing problems of her own with her ongoing email scandal and insurgent rise of Bernie Sanders in the polls, leading in New Hampshire and in some polls leading in Iowa too. So what do we make of that? And, you know, having been inevitable once and lost, could the same happen to Hillary Clinton again? The Republican side has probably been the most interesting race, I think it's fair to say, with the emergence of Donald Trump as a credible candidate for president. Who would have thought we'd be saying that now? But I think it's, you know, at this stage we have to admit that the chances of him getting the nomination and even maybe the presidency are realistic. He leads in the polls nationally, but now leads in the polls in Iowa too. With but a few short weeks ago, we saw Ted Cruz leading. So could Donald Trump win in Iowa and then go on to sweep the nomination? That's something we're going to be talking about today as well. Now, as someone that follows these polls very closely, I have plenty to say on the subject, I think it's fair to say. But I was joined by someone who's a bit more of an expert than me today, Will Jordan of YouGov in the US, who's been following the polls very closely. We talked about the state of the race nationally, who might emerge victorious from Iowa next week, and how much it really matters in a race so unpredictable, where, of course, there are many other states to follow, not least New Hampshire and South Carolina, but of course we have Super Tuesday and then other states too. So yeah, perhaps Iowa is something that we obsess over as the first race, but may not be as important as we think, or is it? All of these things are things that we discussed this week. So I started off by asking Will what his take on the race was as we sit here in January.
Well, I mean, it certainly turned out to be one of the most unpredictable elections, so maybe it's wise to not make too many strong predictions. But, I mean, at this point, I think, you know, on the Democratic side, to start there, you know, I think Hillary Clinton is obviously having problems potentially in New Hampshire and maybe Iowa, but probably still on balance has a pretty great chance of winning the overall nomination. On the Republican side, you know, that's, I think, a lot trickier. We've got Trump now sort of slightly ahead again in Iowa after falling a bit back behind Cruz at the beginning of January. And then in New Hampshire, South Carolina, Georgia, Florida, Texas, you just had a few polls out in some of those later states that vote later in February. Trump remains ahead. That could easily change, I guess, if something happens in Iowa that, you know, turns people against him, whether it's just him losing or whether, you know, as many people theorize, the establishment coalesces around another candidate who's able to beat him in some of the less conservative states. You know, that's an open question. Somebody asked me recently, you know, what chances I would give to, you know, Trump or Cruz being the nominee, and, you know, I would probably put it around 50-50 at this point. But that's a sort of back napkin rather than sort of, you know, anything that's gone through any sort of process.
So you mean 50% chance that it's one of them? Or,
yeah.
I mean, let's talk a bit about Iowa, because I guess the, one of the things that, until I was sort of preparing for this podcast, I hadn't fully appreciated was how much the momentum on the Republican side does seem to be with Trump in that race. I mean, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do agree with that in the sense that he was, you know, he's probably, on his average, I haven't looked at the Real Clear Politics one, but he's at or near the highest point he's been in terms of overall support. And several polls have shown him, you know, gaining between, you know, 6 and 11 points on their December poll, some of the ones released in the last week or two. And, you know, that, I mean, our poll showed as well, you know, we had Cruz ahead in December, and now Trump is ahead by 5. Some of that comes from Cruz, I think. It's about half of it he's, you know, Trump has expanded his support beyond even just sort of taking over Cruz voters. So the whole Canadian thing, or the, you know, sort of kind of parade of sort of establishment figures who have more or less, you know, taken hits at Cruz or said that they wanted, they would prefer Trump or whatever it is, something has tipped it back in his direction, I think, over the last couple of weeks. And so far, that's what polls have shown. I haven't seen anything that shows the momentum going back in Cruz's direction. Still very much within, you know, striking distance in something like a Republican caucus.
I mean, I was looking at the most recent poll that I could find, which was a Monmouth poll, which I think you've been tweeting out today, which had Trump 7 points ahead, so very much in line with what you were just talking about there. I mean, so some of the underlying internals there, though, seem to be quite interesting, namely that when you're looking at turnout, those people that have sort of voted before in these sorts of things seem to break slightly for Cruz, whereas the maybe less frequent voters breaking for Trump. And I think one of the particularly interesting ones was that they asked people whether they were going to turn up to caucus with somebody else or on their own, and I think 54% said they would come with somebody else, and they were breaking even, 27-27 Trump Cruz. Yeah, I think I'm right in saying 42% said they would come on their own, and they were the people that were breaking 33-20 for Trump. Now, that feels like very much like, you know, Trump's relying on, as Monmouth, I think, themselves call it, lots of lone wolves turning up to vote for him. Turnout's going to be key for Trump, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I think it is. That same poll showed, they kind of basically reweighted their survey based on likelihood to vote and estimated, you know, with their current likelihood screen, which is basically how they determine, you know, which of their respondents are likely to actually vote. And I think that gives Trump the 7-point lead, but if you assume turnout is, and that would assume turnout's going to be about 170,000, if you assume it's going to be more like 130,000, which is very close to where it was in the last primary, then it's essentially tied as well. And that's something that's been shown across other surveys as well, essentially, that Trump support is definitely more reliant on less frequent voters, people who are, you know, haven't been either to general election or primary elections in the past. He also tends to be stronger with, you know, people who aren't registered Republicans or Republican identifiers on caucus day. You can re-register to participate, but at the moment he's, you know, kind of relying on it being an election that involves more sort of independent-type voters.
Mm. I mean, what's your instinct? Because it seems to me that the message is very clearly that Trump needs higher-than-usual turnout to prevail. And I suppose if you add to this that, you know, Cruz's support seems to be disproportionately from very conservative people, from evangelicals, I guess only adding weight to the idea that these people, I don't know, intuitively as a Brit, I would think these people are much more committed to turning up. I mean, do you feel like it's an election where turnout is going to increase, or do you think this is maybe another polling miss that we've seen over here?
Yeah, I know. I mean, yeah, crossing fingers and all that. But I think that you know, there are definitely signs. You know, I think I could see people looking, you know, retrospectively, you know, hindsight 2020, saying, oh, you know, with Trump and these massive numbers on at the debates, you know, because they have been getting, you know, some of the highest viewership in some of these debates, and that he just brought the celebrity aspect to the campaign that, you know, turned people out in a way they hadn't before. You know, anecdotally, the New York Times had something out this morning saying that people were getting precinct people were getting calls, more calls than ever before, asking where the caucuses are. And so, I mean, I could see how you could justify that retrospectively. I don't have any, you know, data to kind of like demonstrate that at this point. So I'm not sure how much I've gone on a limb. I don't. You know, it's kind of hard to play these things on feel, I guess. You know, Trump definitely appeals to a certain kind of a voter, and, you know, it seems there's a consistent message that these voters are people that haven't participated in primaries as much as Cruz's. Cruz, I mean, again, sort of anecdotally, is thought to have a really strong operation on the ground. You know, he's very well established there. He has the support of and the endorsement of, you know, a series of conservative and evangelical leaders in Iowa. He's, you know, worked very hard to kind of cater to that constituency and also to get the support of those sorts of leaders in communities. So, you know, those factors come into it. I think, you know, if you read, you know, what Cruz's sort of people are saying, it seems they're trying to lower expectations, but they seem fairly confident that they've got this operation. Trump's operation, you know, is kind of a mystery. Nobody really knows. You know, there was stories about, you know, a while back him doing, you know, caucus training, which is where you get people and teach them how that whole thing works, and that, you know, it wasn't very well attended, basically. So, I mean, it's kind of hard to know whether this is, you know, especially when you, I think, when you have your mind, you know, online and you're constantly following these things through the internet, you get so much noise and, you know, you have Trump supporters are also very loud online and so stuff like that. So it's like, you know, are these people, you know, are they going to step away from the computer and actually get out and vote, or is it, you know, or is it just another year, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, everything is different.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I noticed listening to the 538 podcast today, which listeners to this should also definitely check out, was that Nate Silver and his team were sort of essentially saying not to discount primary polls or caucus polls, but just that they were much less reliable than those in the general election. I mean, without doing down your own polling, would you kind of agree that like this sort of polling is more difficult, at least, than the general election polling?
Yes, yeah, I mean, I definitely would. I mean, it's a natural, I think, factor of it being, you know, a very specialized situation in many ways. Not only is it a much smaller group of people, like I said, we're talking about trying to estimate the opinions of, you know, roughly 120,000 people when it comes to, well, more than that, if depending on turnout again, but essentially a very small number of people relative to, you know, 500,000 to 600,000 registered voters on either side of the primary. And so that poses difficulties of its own. It's in a state, you know, I mean, someone like Ann Seltzer is known very well for doing Iowa polling, and she's, you know, probably very well attuned to the different sort of specific rules and specific sort of factors that come into turnout in a particular state. So that poses problems for national polling organizations. Also, I think, you know, you found in recent even elections that things can change very quickly, very rapidly with primary polls and, you know, last minute surges. And especially when you're looking at a race that's as, you know, with guys as many players as the Republican side, you can have sudden surges. In 2008, nobody, not a single poll found Rick, 2012, not a single poll found Rick Santorum leading. And it was only in about now, you know, with about 5-6 days left in the, you know, before the voting day, that you started to see him surging upwards. And similarly, I think, you know, Nate Silver highlighted a poll that found, you know, Pat Buchanan on something like 4%, and then he went on to get 23% in Iowa in, I think, 1996. And so, I mean, it's, you know, you have these, you know, situations where, you know, there's a lot changing on the ground. You're going to see massive ad spending. You know, you're probably going to see the majority of the ad spending. I mean, I don't have the numbers to back that up, but you're going to see a lot of spending by the campaigns in the last few days on negatives, and, you know, who is getting hit and who isn't getting hit, and, you know, who's breaking through is going to depend a lot. You know, you've seen in other past elections. In 2004, famously, you had Dick Gephardt and another Democrat fighting it out, Howard Dean, and, you know, that negativity then allowed John Kerry to surge through that and kind of unscathed and then build momentum from there. So all those different factors when you're trying to estimate, you know, what people are going to do on a caucus day is complicated. Yeah. You know, and I was speaking to someone before this, you know, on the Democratic side, there's issues of, you know, there's a viability threshold. So, you know, if in certain precincts, O'Malley supporters, for instance, aren't, you know, getting to 15%, then they can be persuaded to support one of the other candidates. And in a close race, that can really make a difference. And that, again, you know, is something that's hard to estimate when you're asking somebody in a poll, you know, who would you vote for, or who are you most likely to vote for in the caucus?
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad you brought up Martin O'Malley. I mean, let's talk a bit about the Democrat side. Because I suppose when you look at it, and we talked a bit about Donald Trump and maybe his turnout issues that may or may not exist, you might see a similar thing with Bernie Sanders. I think one of the stories which has been very interesting over here has been Hillary Clinton's struggles, and we all know about her email problems, shall we say, to put it mildly. You know, Bernie Sanders has always been ahead, I think, in New Hampshire, and you can talk about some of your polling that may or may not back that up, but he seems to be ahead in some polls in Iowa too at the moment, doesn't he? But then the demographics behind that would appear to be suggesting that it's maybe not all it seems. I mean, what do you think about Bernie Sanders' position?
Yeah, well, I mean, starting from where we left off with Trump, he also has a sort of turnout consideration. You know, you basically, if it's a high turnout primary or a caucus in Iowa, that probably benefits Bernie Sanders because he's relying on voters who have, you know, either too young to have ever voted before or have not previously participated in primary elections. And in at least as much frequency as Clinton voters. And so there's, you know, been announced, I think Nate Cohn from The Upshot did, looking at different pollsters where he found in pollsters who were picking names off of a voter file, which is people that have essentially registered in and to vote, Clinton's leading. And then in all the polls that are random digit dialing, where they're just calling random numbers, you know, Sanders is leading, and that's getting people who are less likely to have been registered. And, you know, if he's able to, you know, he's apparently, allegedly, you know, there are people that are going to, with car rentals and vans and buses, going to be taking, you know, college students back to Iowa who are from Iowa to vote on caucus day. And, you know, we saw obviously a kind of, you know, insane growth in turnout in 2008 with Obama's first caucus. You know, they almost doubled turnout from 2004 to 2008. So then crazy things have happened. But Bernie Sanders' support and his reliance on young voters is, if anything, more extreme than Obama's was. You know, a couple of polls I've seen, you know, just show him, you know, with massive, you know, he's like 50 points ahead with sort of millennial under 30 type voters, and then Clinton herself is near that in support with over 65s. So you have this massive age gap that, particularly in a, you know, it's already a low turnout election if you're comparing to stuff like general elections, but if it's, you know, even a moderate turnout for a caucus, then Bernie's gonna, you know, struggle to get to the level where he is in some of these polls that have shown him ahead. But you're right, he has, you know, ticked up in the last couple of weeks. So again, it's going to be very hard to call because it could be a very close election.
I mean, let's talk a little bit about how much we think Iowa matters. Sorry, people from Iowa who may be listening. I mean, you know, there is this tendency to obsess over Iowa and New Hampshire, and yeah, you know, that's for obvious reasons. They're the first two, and there's all this talk about momentum. And I suppose if we take the races in turn, let's stick with the Democrats for now. I mean, if Bernie Sanders was to pull off Iowa, followed by, one expects, New Hampshire, I don't know what your polling suggests on New Hampshire, how close that race is. I mean, the polling I've seen suggests that he's looking quite good there. It's, of course, his neighbouring state, so you might expect that. I mean, what does that do to the race? Because, I mean, my understanding is that Hillary still has quite large leads nationally elsewhere, and maybe Iowa and New Hampshire are quite Bernie-friendly states anyway. But then, at the same time, if he was to win both, that will be presented by the media as a crisis for her campaign, won't it? I mean, what do you see in that?
Yeah, no, I think you hit on it there. I mean, it would be a sort of negative feedback cycle in a way. You know, you'd end up with negative stories about Hillary's campaign, about crisis if it happened, and that could potentially, you know, cause, you know, push things away from her, and alternatively boost Bernie Sanders' name recognition and familiarity and perceptions of his viability as a candidate. But, you know, that's kind of hard to predict. You know, I think the impact of Iowa will, again, largely depend on the outcome. But it is important to note on the Democratic side that much more so than even the Republican side, Iowa and New Hampshire are unique demographically. We're almost unique, along with Vermont, which is Bernie's home state. These are some of the highest, they have the highest percentage of white voters of any state. But this is a group that Bernie Sanders has consistently performed better with, and by contrast, Hillary Clinton has consistently been in the lead and continue to hold usually quite wide leads nationally with non-white, minority Hispanic and African-American voters. And that's why you often see, if you look at South Carolina, for instance, Clinton still retains pretty huge leads. And you were speaking about our polling. Our polling showed, Bernie Sanders with a pretty substantial lead in New Hampshire, and most polls do seem to show him with, more than 10 points ahead, pretty much at this point running away with it. Whereas in South Carolina, his support amongst African Americans is still very, very low. And again, that could change. I pointed out, or I was reading earlier, that, even Barack Obama's support, he was more or less even with Hillary Clinton into sort of, a couple months before the primaries began in 2008. Following a couple of events, he essentially, made up that ground before people started voting. But that's evidence that it can change. But at the moment, Clinton continues to do really, really well with Hispanic and African-American voters. And that is going to be a problem for Bernie when a lot of the states that come immediately after Iowa and New Hampshire, including Nevada and then South Carolina, the next two, both of those involve electorates where the majority of voters are most likely to be non-white. Mm. And if his support continues to be so lopsidedly reliant on white support, then it could cause problems.
And I suppose even more so when you get to places like New York, Florida, California, where the delegates are. I mean,
California, Texas, yeah. I mean, Florida, those are very, very large states with a lot of delegates that, you just simply cannot win unless you have a substantial support amongst Democrats who are Hispanic and African American.
So maybe that suggests then that if Bernie Sanders doesn't win Iowa, actually he's got serious problems. Almost as though, even though the momentum may or may not be behind him in Iowa, we don't quite know. Mm-hmm. It's almost terminal for him if he doesn't win Iowa.
Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't really thought about it that way because people have been talking a lot about him surging and to be fair, Clinton was expected. She held a pretty, more or less a small double-digit lead or high single-digit lead in Iowa for several months. And while Bernie was making up serious ground in New Hampshire, she was kind of holding on to that. That seems to have changed slightly in the last week. It's kind of hard to tell given the lack of data. But, it is probably true that if she wins Iowa, people will be, she has fought off the message. It'll be a different, I think, message coming out of it. And then at the same time, New Hampshire, Bernie has been leading by so much for so long. If she loses that, people will just be like, that is no surprise in terms of the narrative that comes out of it. Mm. It won't necessarily damage her in the states that come immediately after that.
Let's close on the GOP race, because I guess the same sort of principle. There is this expectation management game, isn't there? I mean, you talked earlier about Ted Cruz starting to dampen down some of the expectation, even though a few weeks ago he looked like he might win Iowa. I mean, another point to think about, I guess, is that even if Donald Trump didn't do well in Iowa and New Hampshire, and it seems like he's going to do well, do the old rules about momentum apply to him when he has such strong name recognition and money?
Yeah, no, I mean, the old rules don't really seem to apply to this election at all, especially on the Republican side. So I would not, make any sort of bold predictions on that basis. I think that, you have a situation where a lot of people assume that, say, if Ted Cruz is able to beat Trump in Iowa, that will in some ways consolidate certain support. You do expect people like Santorum and Huckabee and some of those candidates to drop out if they don't perform well in Iowa, which they're unlikely to do. And then if Cruz is coming out of that as a winner, a lot of people say, okay, if Trump looks like a loser, then that kind of cuts against his entire argument. that would kind of potentially cause him problems. He is, as I was saying, now leading by more or less double digits in a number of other states where there has been polling, but also states that are liable to change quite a bit depending on what happens in Iowa and New Hampshire. You know, and New Hampshire is another big question. You know, does a loss in Iowa impact his performance there, where he is actually more ahead? And also what it means for the so-called establishment lane of candidates. You know, a lot of people have an understanding of the race that there is this, you know, block of support that if it unifies around a sort of Marco Rubio or a Jeb Bush or a John Kasich, that individual has the best opportunity to compete with Trump in some of the sort of northern more blue state, western blue states.
That was going to be my next point, because I think that up until recently over here, where obviously you can bet on these things much more easily, at least. Marco Rubio was, until recently, remained the favourite, even though he was significantly behind in the polls, which seemed counterintuitive. But I think it was largely based on, A, the idea that, well, Trump can't seriously do it, can he, surely? And B, well, when all of these, when the Christies and Jeb Bushes drop out, if they do, then the establishment rallies behind him. I mean, do you have any, not necessarily polling data, but do you have any sense of why you think Rubio hasn't broken through yet? I mean, is it just because he's maybe not as good a candidate as people think he is?
Yeah, I mean, in the Twitter sphere, this seems to be a kind of ongoing debate. You know, Rubio designed it, or, you know, broadcasted a strategy for a long time that was that he would try to stay below the radar, become a lot of people's sort of second choice candidate, and, you know, not surge too early in some ways, which Cruz did in Iowa, you know, not become a thing until the very last moment, and, you know, then before you start taking the hard hits, you've won a primary, and that gives you momentum. And so far, you would expect to see his numbers going up now, and they haven't. And I have actually thought a lot about this and kind of wondered, and it could be that, you know, it's just the dynamic of the campaign has been something that's benefited outsiders. We found that, you know, he's generally seen as an establishment candidate by the majority of Republican voters. They still like him. They have very, very favorable opinions of him. But they see him as more establishment. And they also, you know, I think another thing is, you know, there seems to be, he's perceived as less experienced than Ted Cruz, which is interesting given that Ted Cruz was elected and Senate after him and is actually only 6 months older. And so there is this kind of, I think, sense that he is less ready to handle certain foreign policy problems and the commander-in-chief role than someone like Cruz or Trump. At least that's what our polling has shown. And so none of these things are necessarily, putting the nail in the coffin for him. He is, like I said, still very well-liked. But something, whatever it is sort of prevented him from really taking off. And part of that could be by design, like I said. Yeah. But it could also not be. I mean, the moment of truth will be, basically, you know, is this all part of the plan, or is it really kind of not going to happen?
Mm. Well, I want to close with putting a scenario to you and getting your thoughts on this based on thinking more about the general now rather than the primary season. So Donald Trump wins Iowa and New Hampshire. Suggests that he goes, you know, I'm not saying it's inevitable, but it would suggest that he's got a very, very good chance of actually going on to clinch the nomination. Let's say he clinches the nomination. The conventional wisdom there becomes he can't win the presidency because of his lack of popularity amongst certain groups who he almost seems to have gone out of his way to insult. Do you think that that's true, or do you think that there is a scenario in which we could be this time next year looking at the inauguration of President Trump?
That could damage the Democratic candidate or,
whoever that is as well.
Position.
Yeah.
And he is, you know, even he's been open, weirdly open about saying, you know, yeah, I'll moderate my positions if I'm a general election candidate. And it's worked for him so far in the Republican electorate. I think, yeah, as you point out, he's very unpopular amongst the general electorate. You know, most Republicans like him, but pretty consistently most Democrats, but most of the general public dislike him.
So the independents, you mean?
And so I think, you know, he's obviously going to have a very difficult time winning over certain groups of voters that he has offended, including Hispanics and other groups that are growing in the American electorate. And the general election electorate is very, very, very different than the Republican Party electorate, both in demographic stuff, makeup, and also in the sort of candidate they may want, whether it's insider, outsider, experienced or not. The Republicans are actually set themselves apart in preferring an outsider candidate from the Democrats, who prefer an insider candidate, or not an insider, but an establishment type candidate. So, it could be a crazy election. I think I wouldn't be surprised if there was there have been sort of head to head polls that show Trump ahead. I think those are pretty unuseful at this point, because there hasn't been a campaign. Mm-hmm. I would say it's very, very unlikely. But again. People have said the same thing about him leading the Republican race at this point.
So, I mean, with the proviso that, I'm going to put you on the spot now, which is what I do with anybody who's on this podcast. And bear in mind, Stan Greenberg came out and said that on this show that he thought that Paul Ryan would end up as the nominee on the Republican side. So I don't think anything you would say would be more outlandish than that. But I guess, sitting here in January, this may change. What do you see the race being? As in, who do you think the candidate will be on each side?
Start with the Democrats. Polling continues, at least if the way things stand now. It would take things going badly for Hillary Clinton not to win. So, if we're talking one or the other, I think she's in a good position. I'll put it that way. As far as the Republican nomination, I do think it looks like a Trump-Cruz sort of Rubio race. I think Cruz has better than expected chances. He's very popular. His popularity has actually fallen since the whole Canadian accusation started in the last sort of few weeks. But he continues to be very popular, and he has a lot of money. He's in a good position, but it's been kind of shocking the willingness of certain establishment figures in the Republican Party to undercut him, even when it potentially benefits Trump. I think the calculation there is that eventually someone like Rubio will rise up and sort of defeat Trump, but it's not happened so far. And if Cruz loses Iowa and then Trump goes and wins Iowa and New Hampshire, it's hard to see what at that point is going to really rise up and stop the momentum. But again, it's not something that's very precedented, so it's kind of hard to predict.
So maybe Iowa will be particularly important in this race. Will Jordan, thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
That was the Political Betting Polling Matters podcast for this week. A big thanks to Will Jordan from YouGov in the US for joining me. Certainly lots of interesting points made there. I think one of the ones that stuck out for me on the if we look at the races in turn on the Democratic side, the some of the demographic challenges that Bernie Sanders may face in the wider country beyond Iowa and New Hampshire may prove his downfall. He has to rely on turnout amongst younger voters being elevated. Now, there is precedent for that, of course, with the election of Barack Obama, but I mean, with the greatest respect in the world to the senator from Vermont, Bernie Sanders is not Barack Obama. And also, when we look at white voters versus non-white voters, Hillary Clinton at the moment has strong leads amongst sort of black and Hispanic voters over Bernie Sanders. So these are obviously problems he's going to have to overcome if he is to genuinely get the nomination. But as I said at the beginning of this show, given that Hillary Clinton has this sort of whiff of scandal that won't go away, she's never going to be quite home and dry unless she can somehow try and find a way of drawing a line under that, if indeed she can. And that obviously has a certain, there's a certain part of that that's ominous, both in her race for the nomination, but also her race for the White House itself. I mean, one can only imagine what would happen if there's another crisis to do with her emails and to do with her time at the State Department in September or October. We'll have to wait and see. On the Republican side, it really is fascinating. I mean, one imagines that if Donald Trump wins both Iowa and New Hampshire, it's quite difficult for the other moderate Republicans or the other establishment Republicans, or however you want to label them, to come back from that. I mean, candidates will drop out and that will change the dynamics of the race, so that is important. But at the same time, if Trump can win back-to-back primaries in the first two, puts him in an extremely strong position. And one of the things we didn't discuss on this week's podcast were the implications of Donald Trump pulling out of this week's Fox News debate. That is the type of thing that you can see having an impact in a close race in Iowa, where turnout is going to be particularly important. You know, will people appreciate, you know, Donald Trump having the guts to stand up to Fox News? Or will they actually be turned off and think that this isn't very presidential? We can't second guess that. I mean, maybe there'll be some polling out between now and Monday on that issue. But yeah, that's a big call. It's a big call from him. Traditionally, these things never matter as much as you think they're going to. One only has to reminisce about the debates in the UK general election, which, I mean, you know, with the caveat that the polling was generally wrong anyway. They didn't seem to make much impact on the contest. Yeah, this spat between Megyn Kelly and Donald Trump that's ongoing probably won't either. But it'd be interesting to see maybe if Ted Cruz does squeak it in Iowa, whether Donald Trump lives to regret his actions this week. But anyway, lots to consider, and I think next week we'll be looking at Iowa again and seeing what the results are, of course, but the impact of them on the race and what it tells us about who might end up victorious on both sides. Certainly lots to consider. The music you're about to hear is Pollinate by Kirk Pearson, licensed under Creative Commons. And you know, if you like the show, do tell other people about it. Do give us a share on Twitter or Facebook or whatever sort of platform you're listening to this on. If you're on iTunes, do subscribe and give us a rating and a comment. I'm told that helps expand the audience by getting us up the charts on iTunes. It's not quite as simple as downloads. It's also about things like comments and ratings and all that sort of thing. We're up to 28,000 downloads an episode, which is absolutely phenomenal. It's numbers that are quite hard to imagine, really, the number of people listening, but it's fantastic. And we're obviously keen to grow it as much as possible, and the more we grow the podcast, the greater the variety of guests and things we'll be able to get on, so that would obviously be fantastic. But for now, thanks very much for listening, and keep an eye out for more Polling Matters, politicalbetting.com podcasts in the future.